Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today I'm going to be talking to Jeff Simpson. Jeff has worked the last two film festivals with me, and I got to tell you, he's been a great asset at the festivals. And besides that, he's one of those people who, when you're working the festival, he also makes a point of watching a lot of the films. So, of course, at the festivals, we hang out and talk about movies. So I said to him at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in November, why didn't you come in and do a podcast? And he did. With Jeff, we're just doing the DF4Q, or Discover Film 4 questions, which are favorite movie, an underrated movie, an overrated movie, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. But I want to let you know at discoverfilm.net, on the post for this podcast, there's going to be links to Jeff's films, things he's both acted in, and things that he made himself. I know it makes me sound old, but Jeff's a really good kid, and you should check his stuff out. All right, let's hear his DF4Q.
Okay, so there's two that I rewatch a lot, depending on my mood, and that's I Love You, Man.
That's a great movie.
It's such a great movie. And, like, I'm not going to be the guy who every answer is going to be, like, an Oscar award-winning film or anything like that. Because I can appreciate those movies just as much as, like, a slapstick comedy. It all just depends on kind of my mood. Like, I seriously, I was sitting in front of my TV last night. I think it was last night. And we lucked out. We'll get some screeners every once in a while. And I was sitting there. I was like, all right, I can watch Three Billboards outside of Missouri, or I can watch, like, The Office or something like that. And I was just kind of, it was 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock or something like that. I'm like, you know what? I want to give the Oscar nominated movie a legitimate viewing. Whereas I've watched The Office so many times, like, screwed it. Something to kind of fall asleep to and just kind of be brain dumbed by. But, I don't know, man. I go on tangents too, but
no, that's cool. I Love You, Man is actually, I think I would dare say it's the best of the bromance movies.
Oh, for sure.
It's the best of that genre.
Yeah.
I just think it's done better.
It's honest. It's real. It's one of those deals where it's the combination of different styles of comedy mixed with, like, realistic reactions. Cause I mean, I know I've done almost every single thing possible that Paul Rudd's character has done. Like, I've left those, like, 8-minute long voicemails just going, like, what was I just talking about to you? I'm losing myself. I'm calling myself by the wrong name. Like, I've done that so many times. Like, I've probably missed out on half the interviews in my life because I've left, like, lengthy, just dumb messages. But I don't know. I just love that style of comedy. So that's something that cheers me up every time. And then, I'm a big fan of movies. This one's a little underrated, but at least when I saw it, is Lars and the Real Girl with Ryan Gosling.
Oh, that shouldn't be considered I don't know. That's a brilliant movie.
Yeah. And I had seen, I think I saw it get nominated at Sundance or something like that.
Yeah. It was nominated for, well, it used to be an Independent Spirit Award.
Yes. It was something, yes. So it was that.
Yeah.
But that was, like, still right around the time where I was kind of still being introduced to, like, the depths of the industry. Yeah. You know, I was a hockey player growing up and everything, so I was, like, super focused on that. And then it was, like, my junior, senior year, I was on this team that traveled a lot. And it's just when you're in a bus for 18 hours at a time, sometimes you just want to tune everyone out and just say, all right, like, everyone just leave me alone for a minute. So they would pop on a movie. I'd pop on the headsets and I'd just watch it and I'd get lost. And so that was, like, you know, there was a huge gap up until probably about, like, 2006, 7, 8, somewhere around there, where then I started watching, like, every movie that came out. So, you know, I do have a general appreciation of older movies, but it's kind of funny, like, everyone's like, oh, yeah, like, I remember seeing Casablanca when I was 3, and I was like, I remember seeing, like, Happy Gilmore when I was 5, and then, like, fast forward to seeing, like, Step Brothers, you know?
So, yeah. But I'm curious, how old were you when you saw Lars and the Real Girl?
Lars and the Real Girl, I was probably 23, so
okay, yeah, because I mean, it's a mature, the ideas in it. I'm impressed that you appreciated it so much.
Oh, absolutely,
because there's so much emotional depth to that film, and
yeah,
and the kindness of everyone in that town towards him. I don't know if I've ever seen a film with that much kindness expressed between people.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of movies like that, like Liars and the Real Girl, and Silver Linings Playbook was something very similar to that, where it highlights mental issues in a certain capacity, where it's trying to help us as a society better understand those who can't really even describe what they're going through. I'm trying to remember, someone said some quote where it's like talking to someone, like asking someone why they're depressed or why they're mentally goofed in any way, shape, or form. It's like telling them to do a task that they can't do and then be like, well, why can't you do it? And it's like, well, I don't really have the instructions. It's like, well, just do it.
I love that film.
Yeah. It's so great. Oh man. And it gives me that kind of sense of like back home too. So I always kind of like, I watch it when I'm homesick too. I'm like,
because the scale of the town.
Yeah. Or? I'm like, oh, small town. And I mean, not that St. Louis is really that small of a town, but it's the biggest small town in the world, basically.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's under a million?
Like, technically, like, the city is. Yeah, but, I mean, it's...
Metropolitan area. Yeah, yeah,
it's... I mean, it's on scale with any other... I mean,
think it's like of, a San Jose kind
yeah,
of size,
Yeah, think of
probably.
Cleveland. Think of, you know, yeah. towns like that. Like, it's a good population of people, but you're 1 to 2 degree separation from anyone in that town. It's crazy.
So, right, yeah. right.
But, yeah, so I watch that movie sometimes when I get homesick or just kind of need a little indie flick to vibe out to, but...
God, yeah. I want to see it again. I haven't seen it since it was in theaters.
So good.
It really is a great film.
Yeah.
My right, theater on right. So your number one, or your of your favorites, they're not necessarily ranked, was I Love You, Man and Lars and the Real Girl.
Yes, those two were awesome. And then I've got to give credit to Happy Gilmore and Mrs. Doubtfire. Those are like the first two movies I think I've ever seen in my life. My family wasn't huge movie buffs. Like, it was just the thing in the 90s. It would, like, once a month, they'd be like, oh, we went to Blockbuster and rented a movie. Let's give it a shot. You know, it was like, honestly, I think it was a movie a month, if that. And we loved those two so much that we rented them multiple times. And then my parents were like, let's just buy it. So those were the first two I think we ever owned, like, on VHS. So it was those two I got to give credit to. And then I've got to give credit to... my high school film teacher. I did a film appreciation class and a film production class. Fast forward to film production, he showed us The Departed and Into the Wild. And those two movies, like, we sat there and we broke them down scene by scene, and he was like, oh, look at the X shadow on, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio in this scene, and oh, look at the X shadow here. Like, he was sitting there pointing out little things, and I'm just like, oh my God, movies are just like books. They're so much deeper. So, yeah, so I had those two.
It is true. Some movies, yeah, it is, yes. It is interesting the first time someone breaks down for you what can be done. For me, actually, it was The Graduate. That blew my mind at, like, age 16, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. You got it early. Like, you got that exposure. Because I had seen The Graduate, but then they broke it down at film school. It was, like, freshman year. And it's one of, like, the three movies you have to watch. It's, like, The Graduate, Casablanca, and
Citizen Kane.
Yeah, Citizen Kane.
Is it Citizen Kane?
Yes.
Not The Godfather?
No. We didn't break down The Godfather, Citizen Kane.
Right, so you break down...
We wrote those three down, and of course...
I remember a film school professor who, instead of Citizen Kane, it was The Magnificent Ambersons, which was... Orson Welles' second film.
Okay.
And according to this guy, far superior.
Far superior.
Yes.
Well, brilliant. I'll have to watch it.
So I think you gave me like 10? Or
gave you a lot.
Seven to 10? Which is funny. If you had to pick your top three.
Top three favorite movies?
Top three. Tell me, what out of that list, what are the three best?
I Love You, Man. Lars and the Real Girl. Mrs. Doubtfire.
I was wondering if it's going to be Doubtfire or the other classic, right?
Robin Williams, he's one of those guys that he's an Oscar-nominated actor and winner and just a phenomenal being in general. And he can sit there and he can go Good Will Hunting and then do, like, Flubber. Like, he doesn't take himself too seriously. No matter what he does, he performs well, but he can be a goof. That's why I like I Love You, Man with Paul Rudd. I've seen that guy do amazing roles, and then I've seen him make a fart joke. And it's just, I think that's what acting needs to be. I think you need to not take yourself too seriously.
He has become the master of the seen alone in the mirror.
Yep.
Like, psyching himself up for something. I've seen him do, like, in three different movies.
It's so good.
But actually, on Robin Williams, you've seen Garp? The World According to Garp?
No. Oh, wow.
See it. Just
so
see it.
You'll be interested in this. So, I was trying to go to film school. I couldn't quite afford it. And I was going through this whole process of, like, trying to... I was in between high school. I was in community college. And I was trying to get to film school. And so I was like, all right, you know what? I need to start looking into things more. I need to start educating myself while I can. And so I took a few of my favorite actors and, like, one or two of my favorite directors. And I got... I just went on Amazon. I just bought all the DVDs. I was like, ah, screw it. I don't care if I'm poor. I'm just going to spend all this money, and I'm going to watch these movies. And I'm going to go, all right, this is the first thing he made. I'm going to watch it in order, and boom, boom, boom. And Robin Williams is one of the people I did. I did Tom Hanks, Robin Williams, Bradley Cooper, which, yes, that's
amazing. I love him. I think he's great.
He's amazing. And I'll get on that in a minute. But, yeah, so it's... those three. And
is he going to be one of your underrated?
Oh, for sure.
Okay, cool.
Yes. So it's those three for actors. I did Christopher Nolan as a director, and I started doing Spielberg. I don't think I made it all the way through, but I started doing Spielberg. But yes, I did. Robin Williams was the one I focused a lot of energy on, and that's interesting that I haven't seen that one because I own pretty much everything he's ever done.
But make a point, because all I'll say about it is it's one of those films where he's acting. He's acting quite seriously.
Sure.
And it's refreshing. You know, it's refreshing to see him do that, just like Moscow on the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's refreshing when he didn't feel pressured to go for the laugh.
No, it's...
And he is brilliant. It's incredibly sad.
Yeah. That one tore me up.
I'm playing a silly game by throwing things at you, but The Fisher King?
Yes. Awesome movie.
I'm a Gilliam guy, so that was...
super good.
God, his list is way too long.
It's crazy long. I probably don't own every movie, but...
No, you could.
Yeah.
But anyway, wait, we're going...
Yeah. We're too deep into it.
Let me shift you to question two, which is... well, you can rearrange the order if you want, but
sure.
Question two is generally that movie you think is underrated.
Underrated. So I was torn between two here, and correct me if I'm wrong here. So this one's more of a concert documentary, but it's the Talking Heads' Stop Making Sense.
Really?
Yes. I think it's underrated because I don't hear anyone really talking about it ever, but it's just genius. I just watched it the other night again, and it's taking the most simple idea of a concert, and it's telling a story. So he's starting with a guitar and a boombox, and he builds it throughout the entire thing to add screens and multiple band members and different instruments and different sounds, and then putting on the big fat suit and, you know, running in place and dancing and just going nuts. And it was directed, too. It was actually a concert that was directed by a film director.
John Fendemi, right?
Yes, yeah, I believe so, yes.
You would know better than me if that's underrated, because I am of the generation...
Yeah.
Talking Heads were my favorite band in high school.
Yes.
And that movie came out, I think, when I was in 11th grade.
Okay.
So it's like, to me, that was like one of the movies of the year at the time.
Okay, good.
But I have no, you know, the fact that somebody your age would appreciate that movie at all, it's incredible to me.
Yes, and that's the problem. I don't hear people talking about it. But anyway, so that's Talking Heads.
So Talking Heads.
Big fan.
Stop Making Sense.
Yes. That's
Jonathan Demme.
Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful film.
That's one of my...
And that really was the concert. The concert he put on was very much, but they staged it a little better for the film,
sure,
for the cameras. But that was a great time.
Did you get to see them live?
I did, but not that tour.
Man.
Little Creatures.
Oh man, I'm so jealous. But yes, anyway, and so the other underrated film, this one's probably a little bit more relevant, but it's The Words. And Bradley Cooper's in it, Dennis Quaid's in it, and this is probably one of the first things I'd see Jeremy Irons in. Oh my gosh, it is so good. It's all about he's a struggling writer who he just can't
quite... I remember that.
Yes, can't quite get it to happen, and he finds a script, an old script book, and he types it up, and he's a an author, not a scriptwriter.
Yeah.
And then he has to deal with the consequences of stealing someone else's work.
I remember that now.
Yeah. So unbelievably beautiful.
Got Jeremy Irons, too.
Oh, he, like, that put him on the map for me, for sure.
I was, oh my God, he'd been around for so long. Yeah, but
he's such a talented guy, and I'm like, oh, the words this movie no one's ever heard.
He doesn't get to work enough. I don't know what the story is. He's doing stage all the time in London. I don't know.
Maybe, but yeah,
he's one of those people. The old saying is they could just stand on stage and read from the phone book, and you'd be captivated. Well, so your number three is the film you think is overrated. You're going to say,
This,
I know it can be tough, but remember, you're not saying it's bad.
Yes.
You're saying you may love this film, but people say it's the best thing of all time, and they're overstating it.
Okay, that actually eases me into it a little bit
more. Yeah.
In general, I think Tarantino's overrated. Yeah, it's a...
You have every right to say
swinging that. For the fences here. He's one of those guys that he had a new way of filming. It's awesome. I appreciate that. And Django Unchained, I saw that one and I loved it. I was in the theater going freaking bananas. It was so awesome, so well done. But I've sat down. I liked Hateful Eight, but it's sitting there. It's 30 minutes of dialogue. And then, oh, gunshot. I almost feel like he's trying to do something where he's like, let's see how long I can get people to talk before I just shock them with a head exploding or, I don't know. There's just something about his style that's just so quirky.
Well, it's very idiosyncratic. So definitely, I have no problem with somebody saying it's not for me.
Yeah.
Because it's very, he's not making an effort to do anything but his own thing.
Exactly.
So he's not trying to make films that everyone in the world will like.
Yeah. And I again, it probably goes back to just film school. It's everyone just hopping on the Tarantino train and... he's one of those names you just hear constantly, and don't get me wrong, I've watched pretty much everything. For some reason, I couldn't make it through Reservoir Dogs. I don't know what it was. I know.
I'm in utter shock. That might be, in some ways, it's the purest, best one.
Yeah. But, the idea of the movie is probably the most intriguing to me. I saw Pulp Fiction. I think it took me twice to get through it and kind of understand it a little bit more. I don't know. I can see.
Did you see? Or what did? I'm sure you saw it. What did you think of Inglourious Basterds?
Really did not like it. Okay. I've watched it a couple times though, and first time I watched it, hated it. Second time I watched it, I was just kind of like, ugh, man. Eh. But there's scenes where I'm like, oh, this is genius. But then he'll cut to another scene where I'm like, oh my God, I have to sit here and go through a whole nother 20 minute spiel of them talking about.
Just because I'm looking for something.
Yeah.
I'm fishing now.
Yeah.
But is one of the scenes you think is genius when the Jewish girl is sitting there and she's secretly Jewish and then the camera's on her. And then Christoph Waltz comes in and stands behind her, and he's never on screen, just his voice is right. He's standing behind her and talking, and she has to know that the man who murdered her whole family is standing behind her, and the camera never leaves her face.
Yeah.
It's, to me, that's out of this world.
Exactly. And it's moments like that where it is brilliant. He can do things with the camera. He can do certain ways to tell the story that really is genius. I don't know. I can't.
But is it the hype?
Maybe it's the hype. Maybe it's. I don't know.
But you don't have to like it.
Yeah, I'm sounding like the most uneducated filmmaker right now.
No, not at all. Someone else said that their most overrated is Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was it too. It was everyone hyped that movie up, and I think I waited till 2012, 2013 to watch it. And I mean, that was 90s, maybe early 2000s.
Yeah, it was 90s.
Yeah, and it had just been hyped my whole life. And that again, that very well could be it. It could just be the hype of things. But I don't know. I see a genius in him, I just don't think I see it through an entire movie.
But anyway, so just Tarantino in general is your overrated.
Yes, for the most part. And then a specific movie, I'm going to catch a lot of slack for this one as well. Boyhood. Yeah. What was that, like 2-3 years ago in the Oscars?
Yeah.
And again, I will speak honestly here. This very easily could have been the fact that I had the exact same idea. Because I had this idea to go, all right, let's take some actors, let's film them, then film them again 5-10 years down the road, then film them again 5-10 years down the road. And I like had it kind of drawn out a little bit. And then maybe 5 years after my original idea, Boyhood came out. And I was like, oh, well, even if I would have started doing it, I couldn't have done it regardless. And
because they'd already done it for 10 years.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know how I didn't hear about it. And that was the other thing, too. How did that not get out before it released? Like, how did people be like...
Because I think it was just like a weekend a year, right?
Was that it? I thought they were, like, doing decent productions.
I think it was pretty low key.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the ways he got those actors to do it, right? It's because it was like a week of their life once a year.
Okay, yeah. Boyhood was that one that it was dull to me. It didn't quite speak to me. And then I've heard friends just be on the opposite scale. They're like,
but I mean, are they so amazed at the aging of the characters, or are they amazed by the actual story?
I don't know. I really don't.
Because it is a bit of a stunt.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to see it because I have no opinion. I'm just curious.
Yeah. Like,
I'm curious. It is a divisive film, mm-hmm. that's for sure. So,
because that was my whole thing. I think it made such big waves on the Oscar buzz because of how it was made. I don't think the story itself was compelling enough to be an Oscar film. But yeah, anyway, that's overrated. So
that's overrated. So the last one?
Lesser known that need to be known. Lesser known
that people should seek out.
Just two in general, anything by the Duplass brothers. I know they always make a big Sundance run and kind of an indie market run. They're such good guys. They're such good filmmakers, and they do filming in the way that I want to do it. You know, they get their friends together. They do it on the cheap, and they just have a good group of people that believe in the project. So it's them and Joe Schwamberg, you know, big indie film guys. Some now they've got the Netflix buzz behind them and everything. Watch their stuff. It's good.
I've seen some. Some of it I really like.
Yeah, and it, you know, Drinking Buddies is. Weirdly one of my favorite movies, even though it's open-ended and it received a lot of criticism, and I get it. It's just one of those deals where you can just kind of tune out and you can just watch other people live their lives, and there doesn't have to really be a resolution to it. You can kind of just live someone else's life for a minute. So I think that's kind of the beauty of Schwamberg, is that he's just kind of showing you reality. And it kind of leaves it open to interpretation of how you would like to continue living their life, you know? I think those guys, I don't know if they're exactly lesser known, but, you know, obviously their stuff isn't.
Well, it's funny, they are, I mean, I would almost, my perception is they're kind of hipster.
Yeah, very hipster in the way that they do things.
But at the same time, but I mean, I don't know if this is true or not. Mm. Well, the director, the writer-director, Greta Gerwig of Lady Bird, mm-hmm. I think, came up with them.
Oh, okay.
I think she did quite a few things of theirs. I heard an interview with her where she said, I don't know if it was, I think it might have been Schwamberg, that everybody shared the same salary. Like everybody, yeah. Like there was no hierarchy.
Yeah.
And everyone was basically collaborating and improvising and working together, and there was no hierarchy, no this person's important, that person's not.
Yes.
You know, and that's obviously a really healthy way to go about things.
That's my big thing on Schwamberg, is I like the way he makes films. You know, he writes a loose script. He gives the actors the ability to improvise. You know, it looks awkward on screen sometimes, but it's also real. It's not these actors acting. It's really just them reacting to everything. And I think there is a sense of genius in that. Just being able to get someone down to the bare bones truth of how humanity really is.
What's the starter film for Schwamberg? Like, if you were to just say, Not necessarily your favorite, but maybe your favorite, but like the one that, like, you know, the one that can hook somebody into this world. Because I, with the Duplass brothers, I saw Jeff Who Lives at Home.
Yeah.
And I wasn't overwhelmed.
It's not a very overwhelming movie, but it's...
In fact, stuff they've been attached to on HBO, I've liked better.
Yes. Yeah, the big, like, studio stuff they're getting attached to now is catching a lot of buzz. They're kind of breaking away from the indie vibe.
And they were involved in that show Animals. I don't know if you ever saw Animals on HBO, or if you have HBO Go or HBO Now.
I don't, but I've been hearing about it. Isn't it kind of, like, really creepy?
No, it's just insanely funny. It's animated. And it's basically a comedian. It's kind of one of those vibes where it's a bunch of comedians talking, and they poorly animate animals in New York City interacting with each other.
Oh, you know what? Okay, yes, I have seen that. Yeah. But, yeah, anyway, so do that. Digging for Fire was a good Schwamberg film, too. That was really? His most Digging recent. For Fire. Yeah. Right. Oh, but I do have two hidden gems, though, that I would like to specify for sure, though. Yeah.
Go on.
So outside of the Duplass brothers and Schwamberg, like, you know, those guys do great stuff, and you've got a couple recommendations there. But there's two films that specifically that I want to bring up. Comedically is Black Dynamite. It was a big Sundance hit a while ago, and it was, like, on purpose, it was done poorly. Like, you'll see booms, like, enter the frame, and you'll see, like, background extras, like, doing, you know, goofy stuff. Like, they're purposely acting poorly, and it's so unbelievably funny. I mean, it's very similar to Naked Gun. Where it's things like that, where, you know, they got the guy, they're walking through the set doors, but then he, like, looks and he's like, oh, what? And he walks around the set door. You know, it's things like that. It's just these little comedic, like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, it's a very faithful recreation of the 70s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really funny. Definitely check out Black Dynamite. Probably not family friendly, but, yes, very funny. And this is, like, my all-time... Like, this is my super hipster, like, throwback, like, movie buff moment. But it's Christopher Nolan, and it's the first film he did. I believe it was his graduate thesis, or it was done immediately after he graduated. But it was called The Following, and it's done in black and white, and it's got, oh my gosh, I want to say there's an actor in it that he kind of keeps using, but... It's this idea of this writer, he's having writer's block. I tend to like a lot of movies about writers with writer's block, but yeah, so it's that, and so he decides to...
Yeah, I think Following is the one that started everything for him.
Yeah, exactly, and it's no one really knows about it, but it's so good, and basically he just follows around strangers on the street, and he's like, all right, you know, I follow them from basically A to B, and then once they get home, I will never follow them again. I just admire their quirks and their ideas and how they go about daily life, not knowing someone's following them. And then he ends up through that getting involved with a man who's involved in crime, and then he gets deeply involved in it, and it's this really cool, just mind-bending, you know, feature. And
I've heard other people talk about it. It's and I haven't seen it, and I love Nolan.
Check it out for sure.
There you go. We got some pretty detailed answers there, man. If Jeff gets me into this whole Duplass Schwamberg thing, I'm gonna lose a lot of time to watching movies. I think we're good. If you go to discoverfilm.net, there'll be links to Jeff's work. You can also watch a lot of great short films. You can also get links to a lot of great feature films. And you can learn about cool film festivals like the Sherman Oaks Film Festival and Film Invasion LA that's going to be coming up in June. You can even learn a little bit about me if that interests you, but, you know, who knows? And I think that's all. Thanks for listening.